Hi, welcome to the Artificial Intelligence, Machine Learning and Data Science Weekly Podcast. My name is Kwan Hong, or you can call me KH. In this show, I'll be talking to AI, ML and data science practitioners around the region. In each episode, I will dive into relevant and interesting AI, ML topics, where you get to know more about topics ranging from AI, ML adoption, best practices, and tips and tricks to be a better AI, ML data science practitioner. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of AI, ML, and Data Talk podcast. In today's episode, we have a special recording at Google DevFest Bootcamp here at the Google Event Center, MP7. For today, I have a special guest, which is Sachin Kumar, who is a founding team member and CTO at Tuple Low Life, as a guest of the show. Hi, Sachin. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on the show, Kwan Hong. So, once again, thank you for having me on the show, and super excited to be part of the podcast.
Sure. I think the last time we met was last year at the ML Summit in Bangkok. So yeah. I think it's great that we meet again, and then we get to become in this show for our recording. So as you know that in my podcast, we actually talk about people who are practitioners in the AI, ML and data scene. So maybe you can do a self-introduction, talk about maybe your childhood, your education background, and then also your career path.
Yeah, definitely. So let me start by introducing myself. So my name is Sachin Kumar, CTO at Tuple Life, which is a connected healthcare company based out of Dallas, Texas. So we are into connected healthcare. So we have our own FDA-approved wireless cellular medical devices connected to our precision care platform, and we have our own clinical teams monitoring patients in real time. So that's a very quick intro about like what I do on at a daytime. Apart from that, as you know, I'm a Google developer expert for Google Assistant and machine learning. My focus is more towards the conversational AI side. We'll pretty much cover what we'll be talking about that and why. From my background perspective, to be very honest with you, I was never in my wildest dreams that thinking that I'll be in this specific field, especially in the IT field, right? So I wanted to be a filmmaker, content creator. Right now, I've kind of balanced both together in some form or the other. But I was more towards the creative side, especially from a filmmaking standpoint. But was thrown into the IT field. But later on, one of the trigger points that basically got me hooked into this whole thing was back in my college, my university, especially towards the end of the first year, there was a course on J2ME, mm-hmm. which was on Java for mobile editions. So if you remember our old Symbian Nokia devices, so we used to build applications for that. So when I joined that specific course, and then when I had a feel of whatever we kind of create right now is going to be in the hands of thousands of people. And that kind of got me hooked into this, right? So immediately I started getting more interested in that. And that was also a time where Google had Android cooking back in, like, I believe back in those days it was like Labs or Google Labs or something like that. So I had the first glimpse of the Android emulator. Mm-hmm. So my tech journey kind of initiated from there, because that got me so interested into like the whole ecosystem. And then the thought of how you can actually build something that can impact other people's lives. So then started working on like individual projects. My first ever application that I developed was like 3-4 months I took time, and this was first time that Android, everything was coming together, was a safety application. So irrelevant of whichever part of the world that you go, it uses different techniques to find out like the emergency numbers, along with sending out an SMS with a link to the maps and stuff. And it used to be multilingual as well, so it supported multiple languages. And that was how it started. So that was my beginning of my tech career. And one of the most beautiful parts where I got into healthcare is the fact that one of the users actually replied back to me. And back in those days, you know, it's university, fresh out of college, you're building out an app, you want to make sure that you have a free version, you have a paid version. And one of the paid version customers emailed me saying that, I am a person who's suffering from stroke, mm-hmm. and I use your application whenever I, in case of emergency, so that my son can, you know, get in touch quickly. And that kind of changed my entire outlook. I was like, I'm not going to make any money out of this. I just made it completely free. And then over the years, started working on multiple technologies, not just specifically Android as such, how you can combine different technologies and build products and solutions. So that's when I started getting more into the Google ecosystem.
Interesting. So from a filmmaker perspective, are you still living your dream to be a filmmaker?
I would say not fully, but I'm kind of satisfying both my aims, goals here. So as a content creator, I've started my own YouTube channel right now. So the aim is for any users from any background, if they are going to look at a specific technology, how they can actually start building it from scratch. Because one of the things I feel like, which I feel to some extent that I'm doing well, is to kind of go into their thought process, like what exactly would be the pain points that somebody will have when they're getting started, right? So it could be simple things like setting up the environment, which is different for different operating systems. So simple things like that. But over the period, I've had blogs, I've written articles, I've done videos, but the YouTube videos or that specific medium has been one of the most impactful ones because I've had thousands of people messaging me just on one specific video and asking different questions. So it's been very fulfilling at that stage.
That's cool. So just now you were mentioning you are one of the Google developer experts in conversational AI. So what is conversational AI?
Okay, so to put it in very layman terms, think about this, right? So the main idea, and I've told this to a lot of people, the main idea about interacting with a machine via voice, and for your machine to understand that and do a specific task has been something that we've been aiming for, not just for the past 5 years, 10 years, we've been having it for decades, right? I tell people I grew up watching Star Trek. I watched Star Trek, so you can see the captain speak to the computer and get the information. That has always been like a dream thing. Yep. And then with Iron Man and stuff like that, I'm sure a lot of people can connect to it. Yep. And one of the most important aspects of, be it the Google Assistant as such, is the way for you to actually have a natural conversation with a machine and for the machine to understand what exactly that you're having, that you're trying to do, and getting that information back to you or getting that information done in the most helpful manner is what conversational AI is on a very high level.
So last time we do have something like what we call a chatbot. So you actually interact with the robot at the behind where using text. Now we are moving to more speech. So of course now people are very excited about all this large language model. So we are like ChatGPT, we have Bard. So is the technology progressing even further, more advanced now compared to, or is there a different chatbot last time and now?
It's definitely progressing at a much more rapid pace right now, and especially with the large language models that we are seeing on a day-to-day basis, right? So one of the things that, especially from my background, I've done a lot of contents and tutorials on chatbots before the generative AI, large language models era. So at that point, if you look at it, we used to have a beautiful tool called Dialogflow, and it's still a wonderful tool. And using Dialogflow, the way how you build conversational chatbots is to actually design the conversations. Mm-hmm. So that's basically, you have basically like a foundational elements like intents and entities. So from a developer, from a conversational designer, your focus was you have to design conversations based on what your user would pretty much say. Mm-hmm. So I can say like, book an appointment at 3 p.m. for my dental service, right? So that was supposed to be like an intent. So you as a developer, you'd go to Dialogflow and create an intent called like book appointment. And then you would feed in training phrases. Of course, it's using machine learning behind the scenes. And you'd feed in training phrases like what the user would typically say. Now, that used to be how chatbot development mm-hmm. used to happen. But now, with the birth of large language models, you don't actually have to go and design the entire intents and entities. What you can pretty much do is use APIs like Palm API or ChatGPT's OpenAI's APIs, and pretty much with just prompt design and few techniques, you can actually build your own chatbot mm-hmm. in a matter of like minutes, right? So that's pretty powerful in itself. Why? Because if you look at it from the way how users actually have conversations, everyone is different, right? And the way how somebody wants to have a conversation with someone also depends. Now, if the traditional way of chatbot design, you're actually depending on the way how you have designed the intents. And most of the cases, if it is not part of your training data or training sets or training phrases in conversational actions, it will then go back to like fallback intents. So then it will say, okay, I didn't understand. You know, can you repeat that?
Or maybe or like something like that. Contact or customer service.
Yeah. Now with large language models, it pretty much has the, you know, the secret sauce to understand what the user is saying. And all you have to do behind the scenes is use the API and power and create the prompt in such a way that it's sticking to your domain. Right? Of course, there's a lot more that you can do to have a deeper integration. But for anyone who's just getting interested in building chatbots, these are like some powerful mediums and powerful tools, especially with the Palm 2 and the Maker Suite, which Google has announced recently. It's a wonderful way for you to prototype these conversations quickly and then use the API, because it's it will also give you the code to call the API. And it's very simple and straightforward. So I think these are like very interesting times where anyone with very little background on some of these technologies can easily get started with these.
Okay. So just now you were saying that you were also focusing, because your first project was really related to health. And then you're also working now in the, like a health tech company. So where do you see the technology of LLM fit into this health sector?
Okay. So from a health sector, as you know, it's highly regulated. There's a lot of compliance that is put in place. But eventually, the aim or the vision that we would like to see is to have the patients have natural conversations with, be it virtual assistants, be it any form of conversations. And for the clinical team or the physicians or the providers to actually make decisions based on that, right? So there's a lot of things that we can actually do. But as I said, the technology is there, but still needs to go through all the regulations and stuff. But once it is, once we've reached that stage, it is in fact a very powerful medium, not just from the healthcare standpoint as well, from a mental health, from other parts of, you know, the whole ecosystem.
Okay. So one of some of most of my listeners for my show are people who actually try to understand or get to know more what do people really, practitioner of AI or ML or data science practitioner in the industry, what do they really do? Do you have any project that you want to showcase that, like you explained that, what are the challenges that you will face, and then maybe give a glimpse of understanding of a common, like some of the projects that you have been doing, what are the common challenges that you face? Is it the technical challenges, or the human challenges, or whatever?
Okay, so from being in this industry, the way I handle things is I look at what are the tools that we have that we can use to actually build a solution to a problem. Okay, so we've had experience building like national scale hypertension programs in the United States. So one of the things that we've learned from doing a program like that is not everyone is tech savvy, mm-hmm. right? Not everyone has the latest smartphones, latest devices. Sometimes you have to dumb down the technology from the end user standpoint, but behind the scenes, the technology should also be driving some of these automations, some of these, you know, the entire pipeline, the data pipeline as well. So what I would pretty much do is, if I have a problem, I'll give you an example for one of the problems. So we had one of the teams who were actually registering people. Mm-hmm. Very simple task that most of the companies do. You need to enter information on a form. Mm-hmm. And what used to happen is they were pretty much having two screens side by side, and they were looking at a PDF on the left, and they were manually typing in all the details. Now, what's the issue with this is their job is to actually do some other activities like clinical monitoring, patient monitoring and stuff. And rather, they are actually sitting and spending time entering mm-hmm. data entry job. And one of the other problems with this is also the fact that they will actually lose a lot of time. So mm-hmm. we are looking at 6 to 10 minutes per form, per patient. And we said, okay, what's the best, easiest way to do this without using APIs and connecting between different systems? Then Google had this called Document AI. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we used Document AI. We use AutoML, natural language. So for projects like these, where you don't need to have the hardcore machine learning mm-hmm. experience, but anyone can basically go ahead, upload all the documents, train the data that you would typically want to extract, okay? And then within a matter of 24 to 48 hours, we have an entire API readily available mm-hmm. where all it takes right now is the user to go and upload the document. And what used to take like 6 to 10 minutes is now done in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you have automatically scaled up the entire solution. Now they don't have to worry about it. You can add in more users in a regular manner at a faster rate. And that's one way of mm-hmm. solving. So you look for things that's available. Don't have to reinvent the wheel. Of course, if it's a passion project where you want to build something better and you want to do it from scratch, you can definitely do that.
Yeah.
And on the other side, if you're looking for something that you're building, and for example, I'll tell you something that I was working on, right? So we have Dialogflow, then we have all of these large language models, which does a pretty good job in understanding our conversations. Now, most of the chatbots that you pretty much see right now is either text-based chat, yep. or you have the ability to have a voice conversation. So then I said, what's the next best thing that we can do? Put a face to the assistant, right? So then I was thinking, how can we actually put like a virtual avatar and have this conversation happening with all of these things working in together? So in that case, then I looked at something like Unity, mm-hmm. A game engine. So then you have tools available where you can actually scan your photo and create a 3D model. Mm-hmm. So you can take that part. So now you have a 3D model. Then you have the Dialogflow mm-hmm. or the large language model APIs. You club them both together, right? And then you can build out the application. Now, for things like if you're using Flutter, which is, again, an excellent framework for mm-hmm. you to build once and deploy mm-hmm. in multiple platforms, you can also combine that. Now, with that, you basically have an application where you can have a virtual avatar, and adding on top of that, Google was actually announcing AR Core,
mm-hmm.
right? So for augmented reality. I said, okay, what's the best thing that we can do? How can we take it a step further? So then now you have an augmented reality,
mm-hmm.
virtual assistant, fully functioning. Behind the scenes, it's using Dialogflow API or the large language model API. It depends on what you can do with it. And you get all the information in real time. So those are like some of the things that you can do. And the pretty much like the way how we solve these problems is like how you can connect multiple things. So that's an example.
I think there's a good advice that do not always start with a complex looking for a complex problem to solve. Break it down,
right,
and then build with the simplest solution first, and then slowly add more features into that.
And one thing that I wanted to actually ask you is, and I know a lot of your podcast listeners already know about this. You've been doing an amazing job, you know, traveling the world, giving a lot of these talks. So what is that? How are you doing this on a regular basis? What is that driving force? And we as community contributors, I'd love to hear your thoughts on what's driving you.
Sure. So I think doing the community job is like I think I mentioned before in other podcasts is something like what we call a labor of love. So I like sharing. I like doing community work because there is a place where people need people to contribute, because in a world of community, there are a lot of people like to consume. They just want to be attendees, but they love to attend event. But at the back of the event, there must be people who also want to contribute. So I see that being at the role of a contributor, it gives me satisfaction. And also allowed me to actually connect with more people around the industry. And also, like I said, it gives you another way to actually contribute back whatever that you know, not just in your working place, but if you can contribute back, giving talks and doing all these events, it allows you to, because previously I worked as an academician for 15 years. Mm-hmm. Naturally, in me, I like to do knowledge sharing. So towards the end, being a contributor in a community works. It's part of my hidden self where I hidden to be an academician. So there's something that I like to do. Yeah.
I think we both have that same synergy.
Yeah.
And I think to an extent, a lot of Google developer experts think in the same manner.
Yeah.
Right. So the way for us to kind of impact communities across the world and also learn, because people think that why do all of this apart from your day job and all of those things. But what I've seen is over the years, this has only propelled me as an individual, both personally and then professionally to, keep myself tuned in with the latest in tech.
If you're doing something not out of passion, it won't last long. I think we know that if you're doing something that you need to drag your feet, then you know that you're at the wrong field, you're doing the wrong thing. But if you're doing something that you are very, very passionate about, then I don't feel... Yeah, a lot of people see that we spend a lot of time doing this, and where do you find the time? But if you're doing something that you love to do, you're passionate to do, and then you find the satisfaction. Even though it's tiring, it's very tiring, especially if you do a lot of traveling, then you prepare talks after talks. But the satisfaction that you meet people, people recognize you, and then there's an impact. Things that we do whether you see it or you don't see it, you know that there's an impact that what you're doing. I think there's a satisfaction that we do in what we're doing.
Yeah, and to all the listeners who are actually listening in right now, I think it's a wonderful example of how you as a contributor is kind of like, spreading this joy and this knowledge across to multiple mediums. And from YouTube as well, like for one of the things that I've seen, as I've told, like I've never seen people interact, not even on blogs, right? So you'll find all the questions or queries all in the YouTube comments. And sometimes that actually helps me to like, okay, this is what people are actually looking for. Yeah. And that also gives us the next idea for the next content.
Yes, yes.
Right? So it's pretty interesting how, you know, our lives have kind of like changed or propelled with the experience with the community.
I think that's the reason why I started this podcast also. It was started during the COVID period.
Exactly.
So people are not doing any more community events. So I was sitting at home. I was thinking, okay, I still need to connect to the communities. So I started the podcast. I started inviting first all the MLGDs to be my guests. Then slowly I roll on to all other practitioners around the region. So I think that's the intention. And then slowly, even though my podcast now is not regular anymore, but I still continue doing it. So, yeah.
Interesting that you bring about COVID. So for people listening in, so you should always understand, like, yes, there's technology, there's machine learning, there's large language models, but at the end of the day, how can you actually leverage some of these technologies and impact people's life, right? So with COVID, we saw a lot of digitization that's happening. One of the examples that I have for you is we created a chatbot, basically, you know, the drive-throughs where we had people come in and take COVID tests. So we actually used Dialogflow back then and created a chatbot on Dialogflow CX, both for and ES, both on English and Spanish, and have that entire conversations going on just naturally, because people are used to forms, but they're in the car and they don't want to be sitting and typing in and going all the way back and forth. But just to have normal questions and have that conversation and get all the information ready. So the, and it has also, like, instead of what they were doing, like, with paper, now when we went into digital, we were able to, like, what used to be, like, let's say 400 to 700 patients per day was now 5,000 to 6,000 on an average. So how you can actually use some of these technologies to, you know, propel and scale your solutions. So that's also something that I want your listeners to actually think about.
Nice talking to you, Sachin. So we have come to the end of our podcast. So hopefully our listeners out there have learned more about what you are doing and benefited from what you're doing from this podcast. So thank you very much. Thank you very much for your time. And then hopefully we'll meet again in the future.
Thanks a lot for having me. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you would like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. Follow this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify Podcasts. If you have any comments or recommendations, I'll be glad to receive your voice messages. Send me your voice messages via the link in the show notes. To catch all latest episodes, you can follow this show on our website, www.aimldatatalks.com, or our social media such as Instagram or Twitter with the handle @aimldatatalks. Thanks again. I will see you next time.